This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawira Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann and I'm joined by Mawira Karatai in Whakatane. Kia ora, Mawira.
Sam, how's it going?
It's going very well indeed. We are coming up for air again.
Oh my gosh, this is just going so well. That was such an awesome talk last week from Nicola. I've been thinking about it all week. So, and I've got a feeling I'm going to be having the same reaction to Emily's. It is my great pleasure to introduce Emily Young. Welcome, Emily. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Welcome, Emily. Where are you, Emily?
I'm based in Wellington, actually.
Wellington. Where did you grow up?
In Wellington. Well, actually, I grew up in, I was born in Tokyo, and then I lived in San Francisco for 4 years, and then Hong Kong for 7, and then back here. So I've been here for 12 or so years now.
So grew up in Wellington, actually all these other places, wasn't very Wellington at all.
Yeah, I know. It's been a while since I've been home, but I suppose I did grow up for my childhood overseas.
So what was it like growing up as a gypsy?
I mean I loved Hong Kong. It was before, obviously, there's been a lot of, it's quite a different place now, but yeah, we had a great time. I've got three younger brothers, so my parents and the six of us had a wonderful overseas experience, I suppose.
Were you connected to New Zealand during that time?
Yeah, so my parents are both born and raised in Wellington. So Wellington is definitely home.
Cool. And what did you want to be when you grew up?
I had no idea. I mean, I love pets, so I think I thought I was going to be a vet. But that was never, the older I got, the more I realised that wasn't my thing. And then I did my undergrad in economics and management and accounting. And then last year I picked up this master's in sustainable business part-time.
What led to that decision? The sustainability bit, I suppose.
Yeah, well, funnily enough, I was working at PwC, which is an accounting firm, in audit, and soon realised that I don't think audit was my thing. I didn't want to do my chartered accountancy, so they said they'd fund and support me through some other study. So I thought, well, I'm very interested in the sustainability side of things, so why not pick this course up? And I've loved it.
So very interested in sustainability. Where did that come from?
I suppose growing up overseas, especially in Hong Kong, it is very polluted, and I love the outdoors and the wonderful natural resources that we do have. So, and I work at Ministry for the Environment, so very passionate.
How did you get from PwC to the Ministry for the Environment? It seems like an interesting shift.
Well, I work on the emissions trading scheme, so I suppose I'm still in the markets, but quite a niche market, and looking at, you know, carbon credits and the carbon markets are very interesting. That was my shift across. It was a perfect kind of connection between my economics degree and then the sustainability master's.
Is that economics applied, or is it economics plus sustainability in order to do that job?
Well, I suppose like the foundation of everything we do in the markets is related to economics, but I do a lot of data insight work and risk work, and just overall helping the operations of the emissions trading scheme.
Independent of the particular mechanisms we're using, do you think as a society we're making a big enough shift?
I'd say no, and I think climate's not a focus for this current government, which obviously is raises different issues as to different priorities. But yeah, so short answer is probably not. Like, it really takes quite an individual level to want to shift things. And you look at the likes of, I think a lot of people think, oh, New Zealand's so small, we're only 0.3% of global emissions. It's China that needs to sort themselves out. But I think every bit counts, and, you know, you've got to pave the way for others.
That's always an interesting argument, that we're too small to make a difference. It would be like saying, well, clearly London doesn't need to do anything.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Or, okay, we're going to excuse the airline industry.
Yes.
Let's take your music track. Who have we got? James Blunt, 1973. Why this one?
Well, funnily enough, it played the other weekend, and it reminded me my mum used to make home videos of all of us kids, and it just sparked a memory. And then Moeda sent through the song list for us to add our songs, and that was the first one that came to mind.
Though time goes by, I will always be. bubble sprite of the forest of Orokonui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, nga mihi aroha nui kia koutou, katoa hou. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars in your beloved universes. And I really hope, wherever you are and whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining, and illuminating for you more and more each day who you are. A triumph of nature's art. Perfect, unique, and here, making things better. Thank you. Now, I know that for us all, globally, and no doubt throughout the infinite universe, we are living through and have lived through a time of tremendous change. And in many ways, I hope that this experience can bring about a global sense of unification, a global sense of oneness and leveling, a global sense of connection and compassion for ourselves and one another, wherever we are, whoever we are. I know that the world is diverse, and being part of a biodiversity restoration project for the last 16 years has illuminated for me daily the way in which life will always surprise us. Whenever we translocate species, and we're very fortunate to be able to do this thanks to Kati Huirapa and whichever iwi has mana whenua of that species, be it Ngāti Koata for the Tuatara, or Makawhiwo for the Hastokueka Kiwi. This role of guardianship is a great privilege and a great pleasure to be able to embody and speak for, particularly for children of all ages, in my role at Orokonui. And if we bring these new species in that did once live here but have been locally extinct for many hundreds of years, there's always a time of uncertainty, and there's always a time of having our predictions tested. And this is what happens, I think, for all of us throughout our lives. We can venture forth in new directions with the expectations in place and find that the destination we arrive in is quite different from how we imagined it. And it's wonderful, I think, to be able to give ourselves the benefit of our own love and compassion in these circumstances and congratulate ourselves for trying what we wanted to try and realising that it wasn't right for us and that that's okay. My dear friend Upoko David Ellison, who is nearly 90 now, has been on the waiting list for many years for Ross Home, which is a retirement village in North Aotearoa's Dunedin here. And he finally got his apartment, and we moved him in, and we hung up all his pictures on the walls, and we did all the things that he wanted, and set up his bed and his television and his chairs and his, you know, various tāuka that he wanted on display, or, you know, put away, and everything, so that it was a new whare for him, a new home for him. And within a couple of weeks, he decided, no, that it wasn't right for him, and he has returned back home to live with his whānau. And, you know, we understand ourselves more and more, I think, each time we try these new ways of doing, being, seeing, feeling. I'm really enjoying learning at the moment on my days off at the South Dunedin Mall, Centre Mall. And it's not actually a mall where you buy things, it's a mall where you learn things. And it's all free. Very amazing. It's through Literacy Aotearoa. And I'm learning many new skills there. And how wonderful it is that we can do this. And it's been so refreshing for me. So I really hope for you that in giving new things a go or in actualising long-held dreams, you're able to appreciate the learning that lives there for you, whether it is the right way or not. Just like when we bring in the baby kiwis and we expect them to stay in the forest, and instead they come right out on the tracks and try to dig up the weather stations. Anyway, I look forward to talking to you all again soon. Ka kite.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. We're talking with Emily Young.
Emily, we're about to listen to your podcast. And before we do, is there anything you would like our listeners to know about what they're going to hear shortly and the why of why you chose to go down that path and anything in particular you want them to listen out for?
Yeah, thanks, Mawera. For me, I think I find this is the aviation industry really interesting, and I think everyone likes to travel. It's a really hard area to try and make more sustainable. So that was kind of what sparked the interest for me. I hope listeners enjoy.
Thank you.
Good morning and welcome aboard Coming Up for Air. I'm Emily Young, your co-pilot on this eco-adventure. And in today's episode, we're going to explore how the aviation industry is navigating the turbulence in its journey towards sustainability. From advancements in air traffic management, sustainable aviation fuel, and electric planes, to the challenges that New Zealand still faces in meeting its net zero carbon emissions target by 2050, buckle up as we uncover the flight path for a more environmentally conscious future in aviation. I'm now joined by James Young, CEO of Airways New Zealand, who has been in the aviation industry for around 10 years. Hey James, great to have you on the show. Could you please start off by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Hi Emily, nice to be on the show. My background, I suppose aviation is my second career. As you mentioned, I've been at Airways for about 10 years and more recently as a chief executive. But my first career was in the investment management industry. I spent about 18 or so years offshore. A significant part of that was in Asia, living in Tokyo and Hong Kong, and we also had an experience in the United States, living in San Francisco. Before that, yes, born and bred in Wellington, and that is home. It continues to be home for me. Excited to talk about the opportunities around aviation today.
Great. Thank you, James. I'm certainly excited to learn more about the opportunities in aviation too. So firstly, could you tell me a bit about how you've had to consider sustainability throughout your career and personal life?
Well, I suppose it comes back to the environment and spending a lot of time in particularly Asian cities, which are quite polluted. That's probably when I first began to think about the effects of carbon on society and how that also impacts economies. A bit more recently, I think we see the effects of climate change with fires globally, rising sea level around the world, severe storms. So probably over the past 5 years, we've all had to think about the impacts of climate change and how that will affect our life now as well as going forward. But in my personal life, we have gone green. We use electric vehicles. The house has solar panels on it. So we are trying to be as self-sufficient as we can at home. We also recycle trash and that sort of thing. So we try to live the greenest life that we can possibly live.
Fantastic. Sounds like you're really making great strides towards a more sustainable lifestyle. So, James, flying is one of the most carbon-intensive activities and has contributed to about 4% of global warming to date. What are some of the key challenges that the aviation industry faces with meeting its sustainability targets?
Oh, it's a challenge. I mean, I work in the aviation industry, and the challenge for the industry is to go net zero by 2050. That is a mountain to climb, because in time I think technology will address some of these problems and challenges, but here and now we are dependent on sustainable aviation fuel as well as electrification of aeroplanes, as well as the use of hydrogen more broadly. So it is a challenge, but I do think we'll get there in time as technology and innovation leads the way.
Interesting. Thanks, James. So you mentioned this target of becoming net zero by 2050. What are the implications for the aviation industry of not meeting this goal?
Look, I suppose the reality is if the industry itself doesn't progress significantly towards that net zero by 2050, then there won't be an industry. So sustainability and profitability go hand in hand. You can't have one without the other. I think all the airlines internationally are very focused on achieving that goal, and the manufacturers of aircraft, advanced air mobility, the use of drones, those are all electric-powered vehicles or hydrogen-powered vehicles. That ultimately is what is going to get us to a 2050 net zero. But there are challenges. Sustainable aviation fuel only accounts for about 1% of aviation fuel globally today, and the reality is SAF can only be used there's no solution for long haul travel other than SAF. Electrification is not able to be used for long haul travel, only short haul travel. So in time, it's a combination of SAF for long haul travel, and then electrification can be used for short haul travel.
So you mentioned electric planes being limited to short-haul distances. Could you please elaborate into why this is the case and what defines short-haul travel?
Currently, an electric plane might be able to fly about 1,000 kilometres, probably no more than an hour of travel time. But it's more restricted than a regular aircraft. Regular aircraft carry holding fuel. So if there's a disrupt on a network, they're able to circle or they have capacity to fly longer, whereas an electric aeroplane is point-to-point. They don't have the capacity to hold if that's required. In time, I think the range of electric air traffic is going to increase. But there are a lot of infrastructure challenges too with electric aeroplanes. You know, the difficulty is how do you get scale and volume of electricity generation and distribution to airports around the country to power these aircraft. So that is a problem that still needs to be solved for.
Mm. So if electrification is only going to cater to short-haul flights and SAF only represents 1% of total aviation fuel usage, then how are emissions from long-haul flights going to be tackled?
Yeah, well, I think this is a challenge because, I mean, SAF only accounts for a very small percentage of aviation fuel. There's a lot of byproduct required to make SAF, which has competing needs. And so the challenge really is how do you produce enough SAF at scale to be able to use an aviation fuel? As I said, there's 1% today. To get that close to 100% there's significant volumes of SAF that would have to be produced, which otherwise has other uses for other products.
That's really interesting. And I suppose Air New Zealand has just purchased 2.4 million gallons of SAF from Neste. And Virgin Atlantic has just completed a 100% SAF run flight. So it seems as though we are seeing an increase in the use of SAF. Do you think that we are going to start seeing other innovations for surveillance type activities?
Yeah, I'm sure there will be more SAF coming into the country in time. That is required to sort of get to that net zero by 2050. But also, we are going to see new vehicles, so advanced air mobility, the use of drones.
What do you mean by the use of drones?
Drones are replacing the need, for example, like helicopters. Operating a drone is much, much cheaper. And I think for surveillance type activity, which used to be run, say, by a helicopter, can now be done by drones. And increasingly, I think people are going to use these new technologies to undertake activities that were otherwise done by, you know, sort of expensive helicopter flights.
Thank you, James. That's really fascinating. So with the post-pandemic surge in air travel, we've witnessed a significant uptick with international flight traffic soaring by 42% in 2023 compared to 2022. I mean, even setting aside the impacts of COVID, projections suggest that the demand for air travel could potentially double by 2040. What are your thoughts on this anticipated growth?
Yeah, I think internationally you'll see growth statistics of about 3-4% growth per annum. You know, we all love to fly and visit places around the world. So the demand for travel at this stage is pretty strong and not expected to decrease. So the challenge is how do you meet the need in a more efficient way?
Absolutely. Do you think that the rise of online conferences has helped alleviate some of the pressure on air travel demand?
Yep, sure. I mean, you know, if there were any good things to come out of COVID, I suppose that was one thing. We've proved to ourselves that we can work pretty efficiently from home or remotely. We don't need to have as much face-to-face meetings as we used to. So that is good for the environment. It takes traffic off streets and it does also take pressure off airlines. So look, I don't know. I think, you know, the way we're operating today, it's more of a combination of remote meetings, but also I think face-to-face still has a need and a purpose.
Yes, I totally agree. Hey, so thank you so much, James. You provided some really great background into some of the challenges and opportunities that the aviation industry faces as a whole. Now, if you don't mind, it would be great to hear about what Airways does as a business and the role that they play in achieving sustainability objectives.
Yeah, Airways provides the air traffic control service for New Zealand. We operate two centres for surveillance activity, and there's about 21 airfields around the country that we provide control services to. So, you know, we have an important role from a sustainability standpoint because we look at how we can optimise air travel across the country to reduce or to optimise travel times, which reduces fuel burn, which saves carbon. So that is an important role that Airways plays with respect to sustainability.
Oh, absolutely. Optimising flight paths plays a massive role in meeting our net zero by 2050 target. Hey, so you've been at Airways for nearly 10 years now. Can you talk to me a little bit about the progress that you've seen in terms of sustainability initiatives being implemented?
Yeah, it's a real focus. It's a cornerstone of our pillar, our strategic pillar. There has been a lot of change. There's a lot more emphasis on how to become far more sustainable as a business. So we do look at that in terms of scope one emissions. You know, what is the company's footprint? How much waste as a company are we actually generating? And then we've got a series of initiatives to reduce that. We also look at scope two emissions. So where is our energy? Where is our electricity and energy use is coming from? We do try to source as much green energy as possible. We're trialling hydrogen fuel cells on remote sites. We use a lot of solar. So to the extent we can, we look at green energy sources for the whole company. But thirdly, you know, the scope three emission is really that's where significant benefits can be unlocked. And that is through optimization of flight paths to give you know, commercial aviation as well as general aviation the most efficient flight path to travel on.
Great. Sounds like Airways is definitely on track and doing their bit to help the aviation industry meet net zero by 2050. You mentioned hydrogen fuel cells. What application do they have at Airways?
So this is a new technology that we're now trialling. The objective is to do away with diesel generators. You know, diesel generators emit carbon, but they also require significant maintenance over time as well as replacement. The benefit of a hydrogen fuel cells is the maintenance is significantly lower, and it's a very efficient green technology. So we are looking at how we can apply these new technologies around the country in some of our remote locations to replace diesel.
Okay, very interesting. So how does Airways navigate potential conflicts between short-term profitability goals and long-term sustainability?
Well, I don't think it's an either or. The reality is these days is you have to have a strong sustainability agenda as a business. And if you don't, you'll probably go out of business. So we look to build our strategy and our initiatives to generate the most sustainable outcomes for the company. Now, at times, well, there are times, I suppose, where if you're looking at more sustainable solutions, they cost you more money. But in the end, the payoff is greater because you're doing your bit for society and actually customers expect you to be as green as possible. So it's not, as I said, it's not an either or. I think you have to be a sustainable business to be in business longer term.
James, given New Zealand's unique geographical landscape and the absence of alternative transportation modes like trains or subways, do you think there's an over-reliance on domestic air travel?
Yeah, I mean, New Zealand as a country is geographically dispersed, and there's large parts of our roading systems that are highly vulnerable or exposed to weather. And we saw that beginning of last year in Tairawhiti and Napier through storms that came through. So therefore, air travel is a critical means to get around the country. I mean, if there are large slips that take out roading systems, then typically the only way to get into a disaster zone or an impacted area is through air travel. So I think that will remain the case. I suspect across the country, we do have these exposures to weather, also earthquakes. We need to keep all of those airports open and available across the country. Look, in terms of other modes of transport, I think in built-up urban areas, you can have high-density travel systems, but that's very, there's not very many parts of New Zealand that have that high density. Generally, it's pretty low density. And the most efficient way to travel distance is still air.
Yeah, very interesting. And now for our common question. If you could change one thing right now that would make the most significant positive difference for the future, what would that be?
As a country, I think we are going to have to find significant additional sources of energy. So that would be both generation of new energy sources or clean energy sources, and then the distribution to the right parts of the country. I think that is a real barrier. I think if as you look to move to a more decarbonized environment, we are going to have to find ways to generate significant more electricity and then get that sort of distributed to the right parts of the country. But if you're talking about aviation, the challenge for aviation is making sure you've got vast availability of electricity at airports so that we can actually electrify aircraft. So that would be my one thing, is looking at how we can build out the required infrastructure to generate clean electricity and then distribute it effectively.
James, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your invaluable insights into sustainability in the aviation industry. I think it goes without saying that your expertise and perspective have shed light on the challenges and opportunities that we face as we strive for a more environmentally conscious future. So I just want to say a big thank you for being a part of this conversation.
My pleasure, Emily. I think we've got some really exciting challenges and opportunities ahead of us, and I'm looking forward to being part of that journey.
And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in to Coming Up for Air. Remember, together we can soar towards a greener tomorrow. Ka kite anō.
That was really interesting, Emily. Thank you very much. This was different from your everyday job. This is a whole different space, as has been a theme that has run through all of these. What was your motivation here?
Yeah, thanks, Mawera. I think sometimes it's quite nice to focus on other topics and hobbies and interests outside of work. So for me, having grown up and travelled a lot, I think it's something I'd like to continue doing, but obviously in a more sustainable way. So trying to explore those different avenues and ways forward that that potentially could be more sustainable was really something that interests me.
What was your big takeaway from your podcast interview?
Oh, it's hard. I mean, for me, because just domestic air travel can, electrification of planes can only be for short haul flights, you kind of rule that out as a long haul option. So then you focus in on SAF, but there's also competing needs for using SAF. So it becomes this really hard, managing these two different things and trying to find a different way forward almost and looking at other potential options. But I do think it's, quite reassuring to see that there is being some breakthroughs in this space.
Where do you see us going?
Oh, I think that we will start to see more SAF-run flights, and I think we will start to see more electrification of planes, like in sites being set up for domestic air airplanes to charge before they take off, and seeing a bit more of that established around the country, or at least that's what I'd like to see. I think it's really tough because I think also we have seen less flying with the likes of Zoom, so people can join conferences online, which has really helped. That reduces the amount of air travel that is required to do, I suppose, business and our day jobs. They were my kind of key takeaways.
It's funny with Zoom. I live in Whakatane. I work for the University of Otago. I Zoom into everything. I go down there. I'm in Dunedin about every 6 to 8 weeks. And every time I get on a plane, I feel so bad because I teach sustainability and I'm flying from one end of the country to the other to go to work. And but there is still a real reluctance in the world to Zoom. And in fact, one of the boards that I'm sitting on wants to pass a resolution so we have to attend in person. I was shocked. So how do we went through this change. We had this opportunity to make an enduring social change, a whole different approach, fully sustainability based, and then we're walking away from that now. What's up with that?
I know, you've really got it's a change of mindset for people, and I think especially old school run companies probably struggle with that a bit more than others, like the likes of my workplace, which is the Ministry for the Environment. We have a remote working policy, so we've got a lot of remote workers, and we're very, used to doing Zoom conferences and things, and it really does reduce our the amount of flying that we do as an organisation. So, yeah, it's a tough one.
It really is. I was talking to somebody yesterday who was talking to me about a couple of conferences he's organising here in Whakatane. One of them is a radio conference, and there'll be people coming from all over the world. And the other one is a sustainability conference. And I said, so you're bringing all those people to Whakatane for a sustainability conference? And he says, yes, I am, by Zoom. So good. And I just felt this real little surge of hopefulness in that moment. How do we get that change to happen, Emily?
I think the other issue you run into is people want to travel the world and have different experiences and see different sites and get different cultural experiences. And, like, you can't do that virtually. So that's where you need to try and find a different solution. But in terms of, conferences and that kind of thing, I think we can definitely do a bit better in that space and try and, lead the way forward with other companies and organisations to do the same.
You're coming to the end of your master's journey?
I am.
Yep. How are you feeling about that?
Yeah, it's been really good, and I think it's really challenged me and to think about different, different ways of thinking and, be innovative, and it's been such a great course, and I've really enjoyed the cohort. I think the group is great. We have some really good discussions. I look forward to our lectures on a Monday night, so that's always a good thing. Everyone's a lot more engaging than undergraduate. That's for sure.
I have some questions to end the show. What's the biggest success you've had, Emily, in the last year or two?
Oh, biggest success. I suppose for me, personal success was, I think completing uni, undergrad was a big success, but then also I think the biggest step I took was leaving my audit job and pursuing something that I feel a lot more passionately about. So that's what I think in the past year, that's been what I'm most proud of.
Sounds good to me. What is your superpower?
Superpower? Oh, probably getting things done quickly. And multitasking.
Are those two things compatible?
Well, they seem to be.
Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
I suppose so, yes, I do. And I think a lot of the people I surround myself with, especially at work, are very like-minded in that sense.
Do you have a go-to definition of sustainability?
Oh. I think of the New Zealand's clean, green environment and just the recycling logo is what comes to mind first. But in terms of sustainability, it's, you know, keeping what we have today for future generations.
Oh, just realised we've got an economist in the house. What do you think, what's your take on degrowth?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. It's, once again, how do you change people's mindsets to want to you know, be part of degrowth? Everyone's got such a growth mindset. So, yeah, I don't really have any specific thoughts on that.
Is the notion of growth so embedded into all of our economic systems that trying to take it out just wouldn't make any sense at all?
Yeah, I agree. And I think it is, and internationally it is as well. So New Zealand's very much influenced by that.
What would have to happen to change that?
I'm not sure.
Given that it's so embedded into everything that we do, the reporting of growth. One to think about.
Yeah, I'll ponder.
We'll come back to you in a few weeks.
For your PhD.
So what motivates you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
I really enjoy my work and the people that I work with. I want to do good in the world and I want to be able to influence change, especially on industries that have a long way to go. I think that's what I want out of a career. In terms of personal hobbies, I love playing tennis. Love catching up with my friends and family, and I do enjoy travelling, admittedly.
So what's the biggest challenge or opportunity that you're looking forward to in the next year or so?
Biggest opportunity? Things that I'm looking forward to. Well, actually, I'm going to Africa in October, so I'm looking forward to that. I'm also looking forward to finishing my thesis and conducting my research there. And eventually I think I want to move overseas, so that's probably my next opportunity in terms of work.
I'm not going to let that go past. What's your thesis going to be on that you're doing your research in Africa?
Oh, sorry, I'm not doing my research in Africa. I'm going there to travel. But which is what I'm looking forward to. But in terms of my thesis topic, I'm doing it on the public perception of net versus gross emission reductions, which is probably could be a bit much for our listeners, but technical, but whether we should be focused on offsetting CO2 emissions with the big one is forestry, or whether we should be focusing on reducing them at the source, and how you can help incentivize companies to do so.
We are so going to get you back to talk about that. Lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
You know, do what you're passionate about. Go and enjoy life. It's too short. Even I'm still young and I feel like, oh my God, there's so much I want to do. But yeah, make sure you're happy in your job. I think that's one big thing that I've learned already. And surround yourself with people that make you happy.
That's what I do. Mawira.
Emily, it has been wonderful sharing a learning space with you, and I thank you for your contribution to the space. You are the most enthusiastic, bright, happy person, and you give me a real feeling of hopefulness for the future. And I think if we could make a lot of young people like you, then we would have nothing to worry about. But so working on that, how do we do that? I really have loved the way that you've worked in the class, and just that, you know, that you're always happy, and it's just been really joyful. So thank you, and thank you for sharing with us today, and we look forward to interviewing you again about your about this other work that you're doing, and wish you a great time in Africa. Kia ora.
Thank you so much. Kia ora.
Now, I have got five songs lined up to go out to, and you get to choose which one. They are all in celebration of both your moving around as you're growing up, but also your podcast on aviation. So we could choose between Blurter, Dance All Around the World.
The birds and the music. We want you to see the world.
Jess, One Night in Bangkok.
Like another when your head's down over your pieces, brother.
It's a drag, it's a bore. It's really such a pity to be looking at the ball, not looking at the city.
What do you mean? You've seen one crowded, polluted, thinking town.
Take it down, small and sweet. Sweet Somerset up, with the Somerset.
You're talking to a tourist whose every move's among the purest. I get my kids above the waistline.
Bowie and Jagger, Dancing in the Street. Johnny Cash, I've Been Everywhere.
I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Or John Grinnell with the New Zealand version of the same song.
Cause I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain. I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Kaharo, Whangaro, Akaro, Motueka, Taramo, Benmo, Pongaro, Hororika, Three, Wakawurima, Taka, Tika, Raka, Bonahai, Nu, Hakawai, Mahaka, Pono, Hurawai, Kakamokanui, Hakanui, Papanui, Wai, Nui, Matawai, Rangatai, Pikawai, I'm a guy. I've been everywhere, man.
We'll go with Johnny Cash. I've been everywhere.
Dumb.
Well done.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road. When along came a semi with a high-end canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand. And I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, County, Monterey, Faraday, Santa Fe, Tallapoosa, Glen Rock, Black Rock, Little Rock, Oskaloosa, Tennessee, Tennessee, Chicopee, Spirit Lake, Grand Lake, Devil's Lake, Crater Lake, the Beach Lake. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Louisville, Nashville, Knoxville, Ombabaka, Shefferville, Jacksonville, Waterville, Costa Rica, Pittsfield, Springfield, Bakersfield, Shreveport, Hackensack, Cadillac, Fond du Lac, Davenport, Idaho, Jellicoe, Argentina, Diamantina, Pasadena, Catalina, see what I mean. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Pittsburgh, Parkersburg, Gravelburg, Colorado, Ellensburg, Rexburg, Vicksburg, Eldorado, Larimore, Atmore, Havistraw, Chattanooga, Chaston, Nebraska, Alaska, Opelika, Baraboo, Waterloo, Kalamazoo, Kansas City, Sioux City, Cedar City, Dodge City, what a pity. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere.
You've been listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. Brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, who are brought to you by the Otago Polytechnic.
I've been everywhere.
We broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. Today's episode was part of the series Coming Up for Air. Today's contribution was from Emily Young. With Mawira Karatai, I'm Samuel Mann. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Ngāti wā.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.